Chapter 26. With a cruising speed of more than 500 miles an hour, the turquoise-colored Cessna Citation 10 aircraft made the flight to Istanbul in 3 hours after a quick refueling stop in Paris. The raked-tail aircraft touched down at Kemal Atatürk International Airport and taxied away from the main terminal. The 6 passengers went through a special entry gate reserved for VIPs and were politely whisked through customs. The sub-vet had arrived earlier on a special Numa cargo plane and was being stored in an airport warehouse. Zavala wanted to inspect the submersible to see how it had fared on its journey. He told Austin he would catch a taxi to the excavation after he arranged for the vehicle to be transported to the dig. 2 vans awaited their arrival. 1 vehicle would take their luggage to their hotel, while another went directly to the excavation. The Numa scientists were eager to get to the site. The team's leader was a veteran nautical archaeologist named Martin Hanley. On the transatlantic leg of the flight, Hanley had explained the reason for haste. He had made a preliminary trip to Istanbul to see the port which had been built when the city was still known as Constantinople. The port was found in Yenikapı, on the European side of the narrow Bosphorus Straits, when squatter shanties had been cleared to build a new hub railroad station. The site had been named the Port of Theodosius. The archaeological excavation could delay construction of a tunnel connecting the European and Asian sides of the city. Hanley and the Turkish archaeologists were worried that important finds could be overlooked in the hurry to excavate the site. He had returned to Washington to assemble his team. The American scientists were greeted warmly by their Turkish counterparts. Round-the-clock shifts were working the muddy excavation.
"Sure you don't want to stick around," Hanley said. "They've found a church, 8 boats, shoes, anchors, lines, and part of the old city walls. Who knows what treasures they'll discover next?"
"Thanks. Maybe after we do some sightseeing."
Austin hailed a cab that took them along Kennedy Kadesi, the busy thoroughfare that runs along the edge of the Bosphorus. An unbroken line of cargo ships was queuing up to pass through the busy connector between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean. Austin turned to Karina and said, "How long have you known your Turkish connection?"
"A year or so. Cemil helped me recover some Anatolian treasures that had been stolen from the Topkapi Palace. He used to be a smuggler. No arms or drugs, he says. Cigarettes, appliances, anything that was covered by high tariffs."
"Is he connected to the Turkish mafia?"
She laughed.
"I asked him that. He said that in Turkey, everyone is in the mafia. He came through for me, but he's..."
Karina's English failed her for a moment.
"How do you say it? Mysterious."
"I had concluded that."
"You're sure he said to meet him at the upside-down woman with the stone eyes?"
"Positive. He likes to talk in riddles. It's quite maddening at times."
Austin asked the cab driver to take them to the Sultanahmet. They got out of the cab and walked across the busy street.
"We'll find your friend right below our feet, if I'm not mistaken," Austin said.
"He's not the only one who talks in riddles."
Austin went over to a kiosk and bought 2 admission tickets to the Basilica Cisterns. They went down a flight of stairs. The cool, damp air that brushed their faces felt good after the heat of the city. They were in a huge, dimly lit vault that resembled an underground palace. Fish darted through the murky water that covered the floor. Elevated boardwalks ran between rows of columns. Voices echoed in the cave-like chamber. Classical music played in the background. The loudest sound was the drip, drip of water from a dozen different locations. "The Romans had built those cisterns to hold a water supply for the Grand Palace," Austin said. "The Byzantines discovered them when people started catching fish through holes in the floors of their houses. The Stone Lady is this way." They walked to the end of a boardwalk and descended to a platform. Two thick columns rested on bases carved into the faces of Medusa. One face lay on its side, the other upside down. A steady stream of tourists came and went, after pausing to take snapshots of the curiosity. Finally, the only other person left was a middle-aged man who had been there since they arrived. He carried a camera but hadn't used it. He was wearing dark slacks and a white short-sleeved shirt with no tie, the standard uniform for many Turks. He wore aviator-style sunglasses, although the light was low in the cistern.
"Why do you think the Romans put the heads in this strange position?" he asked Karina, speaking English with a slight accent.
Karina studied the sculptures.
"Maybe it's a joke. One face looks at the world as it should be, and the other as it is. Topsy-turvy."
"Excellent, Signora Mercadi," the man said. "Cemil?"
"At your service," he said with a smile. "And this must be your friend, Mr. Austin."
Austin shook hands with the Turk. After hearing of Cemil's underworld exploits, he had expected a Damon Runyon character with a Turkish twist. This man looked more like someone's favorite uncle.
"It's good to meet you after all our dealings, Signora Mercadi. How can I help you?"
"We're looking for a statue that's the twin of one stolen from the Iraqi National Museum."
Cemil glanced at a new group of tourists and suggested a walk. As they strolled between rows of columns, he said,
"There's been a steady stream of Baghdad merchandise through Istanbul. It's depressing prices. Do you have a photograph?"
Austin handed over the navigator figurine. "This is a scale model. The actual statue is almost as tall as a man." Cemil produced a loop penlight instrument and examined the figurine. He chuckled.
"I hope you didn't pay too much for this artifact."
"Do you recognize it?" Karina said.
"Oh, yes. Come with me."
Cemil led the way to the exit, and they climbed back into the bright sunlight. The Grand Bazaar was a short tram ride away. The bazaar was a labyrinth of hundreds of shops, restaurants, and cafes, and former caravan storage depots called Hans. Politely aggressive proprietors lurked like trapdoor spiders, ready to pounce on passing tourists and talk them out of their Turkish lira. They went through the Karşıkapı gate and made their way through the hot, unventilated maze of roofed streets. Cemil navigated the twists and turns as if he were operating on personal radar. He took them deep into the heart of the bazaar and stopped at a small shop.
"Merhaba," Cemil said to a man in his 60s who sat in front of the shop, sipping tea and reading a Turkish newspaper.
The shopkeeper smiled broadly. Putting the newspaper aside, he rose from his chair and pumped Cemil's hand.
"Merhaba," he said.
"This is Mehmet," Cemil explained. "He's an old friend."
Mehmet brought out comfortable cushions for his guests to sit on and poured tea for everyone. He and Cemil chatted in Turkish. After a few minutes of conversation, Cemil asked Austin for the figurine and handed it to Mehmet. The shopkeeper examined the miniature navigator and nodded vigorously. Using expansive hand gestures, he invited everyone into his shop. Shelves and floor were covered with rugs, jewelry, boxes of tea, scarves, pottery, and red fezes. He walked up to a shelf crowded with pottery and placed the figure next to a row of four identical statues. Cemil translated his friend's commentary.
"Mehmet says he can give you a deal on these.
Normally they go for 8 lira, but he's willing to drop the price to 5 if you buy more than one."
"Does Mehmet remember selling a statue to an American photographer a few years ago?" Austin asked.
Cemil translated the question and the answer.
"Mehmet is Turkish. He remembers every sale he ever made. He recalls the photographer very well, especially with this item, which moves very slowly. But he is old,
and memory has not been very good lately.
Maybe this will help, Austin said. I'll take all of the figurines.
Mehmet beamed as he carefully wrapped each statue in tissue paper and placed the purchases in a plastic bag, which he handed to Karina.
Can your friend tell us where he acquired these statues? Karina said.
Mehmet explained that he had bought the statues in the south where his mother lives.
He tells buyers that they are harem eunuchs. The craftsmanship could be better, and the detail was poorly executed, but he likes the old man who made them.
He picks up a batch whenever he visits his aging mother, which is about once a month.
The artist sells them in the abandoned village, he said.
Where is that? Austin said.
Chemil said, It's called Kayako, near the town of Fethiye. It was a Greek village until the Treaty of Lausanne was signed in 1923. The Greeks returned to Greece in the exchange, and Turks living in Greece came to Anatolia. Then the Turks left after a big earthquake. It's a tourist attraction now.
Austin asked the artist's name.
Mehmet said he was sure he'd remember, but first he suggested that Austin and the lovely lady would like to look around the shop.
Austin got the hint.
He bought a silk scarf for Karina and a fez for himself, even though no self-respecting Turk would be caught dead in the cylindrical headgear.
Bidding Mehmet goodbye, at Cemil's suggestion they headed to the Hagia Sophia neighborhood for lunch in a pleasantly shaded garden restaurant.
While they waited for their food, Chemil said, I'm sorry you came all this way for nothing.
I'm not sorry, Karina said. It gave me the chance to meet you in person and to thank you for all you have done. Besides, we're not through here yet.
But you have seen that the statues are only a tourist item.
Austin lined up the figurines on the table.
How far is the town where these were made?
It's on the turquoise coast, about 500 miles.
Are you thinking of extending your visit to Turkey?
Austin picked up a figurine.
I'd like to talk to the artist who made this.
So would I, Karina said. It's quite possible he used a life-size model.
This statue must be very valuable.
Maybe, Austin said. Maybe not.
I understand the need for discretion,
Cemil said, rising from the table.
Dalaran is only about an hour from here by plane. From there, it's not a bad drive to Kayako. If you'll excuse me, I'll be on my way. But if you need any help, please let me know. I have a great many connections in Istanbul.
A few minutes after Cemil left, Austin and Karina hailed a taxi to drive them back to the hotel. The desk clerk found two seats on an early morning plane to Dalaran and made car rental arrangements as well. As they stood in the hotel lobby, Karina said,
Now what, Mr. Tour Guide?
Austin pondered her question and said, I think I can do something off the beaten path. A cab took them back to the archaeological dig. Austin told Hanley he and Karina were volunteering. He put them to work, shoveling mud through strainers. Karina didn't seem to mind being covered from head to toe with Bosphorus mud. She jumped about like an excited schoolgirl whenever they found a coin or broken pottery from the muck. They worked until late at night, when the van came by to take the Numa crew back to the hotel. As they trudged through the hotel lobby, Austin and Karina were so tired, they hardly noticed the pair of men sitting in plush chairs reading magazines. Nor were they aware that two pairs of eyes followed them every step of the way to the elevator.